Good morning. This is Nancy Williams for Petals and Prose. I don't know about you, but when I was in high school, we had to read a lot of things that seemed to me to be kind of boring at the time, and I used tricks to get through and still get A's in classes without actually having read the literature. When I got to be about 30, it suddenly struck me that there were several books that I really hadn't read that I was pretending to have read that possibly that summer I should sit down and read. And so I did. I had a newborn baby when I was 30, and it was handy. So I would sit down to nurse him, and I would read while we were nursing. And thus it was that I finally made an honest woman of myself and read Willa Cather's marvelous novel, My Antonia. I'm going to read you a little bit from this today because it's a book that talks about a time that we all think about and celebrate, which is really the pioneer time, the late part of the 19th century, when she was growing up in Nebraska. I'm going to read you a little bit about July in some very unforgiving territory and food, of course, gardening there. From the foreword of this book, we have a piece by Kathleen Norris in which she says Cather's Nebraska novels vibrate not only with the spoken language of ordinary people, but with the visual images that help a reader truly to see a place. In My Antonia, Cather moves smoothly and spectacularly from the small detail to an exalted vision of the landscape and its possibilities. Not long after 10-year-old Jim Burden arrives in Nebraska, having been orphaned in Virginia, he mulls over his grandmother's solemn instruction never to go to the garden without a stick for clubbing rattlesnakes. Then he muses, "Alone, I should never have found the garden. I wanted to walk straight on through the red grass and over the edge of the world, which could not be very far away. If only one went a little farther, there would be only sun and sky, and one would float off into them, like the tawny hawks which sailed over our heads, making slow shadows in the grass." Willa Cather was born in December of 1873, near the town of Winchester, Virginia, where her ancestors had farmed since the late 18th century. She was the first of seven children. Cather was 9 when her family moved to Nebraska, following her parents and his brother, who had emigrated to the frontier during the 1870s. Cather's family left behind a large and prosperous farm, a house that she remembered as roomy and cheerful, and, of course, the lush foliage of Virginia. Her family settled on a farm near Red Cloud, Nebraska, which had been founded in 1870, and by the time Willa Cather arrived, it had a population of about 1,000, a school, and a small opera house. This book, My Antonia, is pretty much a memoir, although she calls it a novel, because in this case she's not writing from her own voice. She is writing from Jim Burden's voice, her friend who was a year older than her, who also came from Virginia as an orphan. This is what Jim says about July in Nebraska. "July came on with that breathless, brilliant heat which makes the plains of Kansas and Nebraska the best corn country in the world. It seemed as if we could hear the corn growing in the night. Under the stars, one caught a faint crackling in the dewy, heavy-odored cornfields where the feathered stalks stood so juicy and green. If all the Great Plain from the Missouri to the Rocky Mountains had been under glass and the heat regulated by a thermometer, it could not have been better for the yellow tassels that were ripening and fertilizing the silk day by day. The cornfields were far apart in those times, with miles of wild grazing land between. It took a clear meditative eye like my grandfather's to foresee that they would enlarge and multiply until they would be not the Shimerda's cornfields or Mr. Bushy's, but the world's cornfields, that their yield would be one of the great economic facts, like the wheat crop of Russia, which underlie all the activities of men in peace or war. The burning sun of those few weeks, with occasional rains at night, secured the corn. After the milky ears were once formed, we had little to fear from dry weather. The men were working so hard in the wheat fields that they did not notice the heat. though I was kept busy carrying water for them, and Grandmother and Antonia had so much to do in the kitchen that they could not have told whether one day was hotter than another. Each morning, while the dew was still on the grass, Antonia went with me up to the garden to get early vegetables for dinner. Grandmother made her wear a sunbonnet, but as soon as we reached the garden, she threw it in the grass and let her hair fly in the breeze. I remember how, as we bent over the pea vines, beads of perspiration used to gather on her upper lip like a little mustache. "Oh, better I like to work out of doors than in a house," she used to sing joyfully. "I not care that your grandmother say it makes me like a man. I like to be like a man." She would toss her head and ask me to feel the muscles swell in her brown arm. We were glad to have her in the house. She was so gay and responsive that one did not mind her heavy running step or her clattery way with pans. Grandmother was in high spirits during the weeks that Antonia worked for us. All the nights were close and hot during that harvest season. The harvesters slept in the hayloft because it was cooler there than in the house. I used to lie in my bed by the open window, watching the heat lightning play softly along the horizon, or looking up at the gaunt frame of the windmill against the blue night sky. One night there was a beautiful electric storm, though not enough rain fell to damage the cut grain. The men went down to the barn immediately after supper, and when the dishes were washed, Antonia and I climbed up on the slanting roof of the chicken house to watch the clouds. The thunder was loud and metallic like the rattle of sheet iron, and the lightning broke in great zigzags across the heavens, making everything stand out and come close to us for a moment. Half the sky was checkered with black thunderheads, but all the west was luminous and clear. In the lightning flashes, it looked like deep blue water, with the sheen of moonlight on it, and the mottled part of the sky was like marble pavement, like the quay of some splendid seacoast city doomed to destruction. Great warm splashes of rain fell on our upturned faces. One black cloud, no bigger than a little boat, drifted out into the clear space unattended and kept moving westward. All about us we could hear the felty beat of the raindrops on the soft dust of the farmyard. Grandmother came to the door and said it was late and we would get wet out there. "In a minute we come," Antonia called back to her. "I like your grandmother and all things here," she sighed. "I wish my papa lived to see this summer. I wish no winter ever come again." "It will be summer a long while yet," I reassured her. "Why aren't you always nice like this, Tony?" "How nice? Why, just like this, like yourself. Why do you all the time try to be like Ambrosch?" She put her arms under her head and lay back, looking up at the sky. "If I live here like you, that is different. Things will be easy for you, but they will be hard for us." And I'm thinking, after a day like that, there would be nothing that Antonia would probably like more than to go back to the kitchen and eat a cookie. So I was looking very hard for some genuine cookies from that era, which I used to have a recipe for from the Jensen Historical Farm out by Wellsville. And it was, if you can find it, you could perhaps Google it. It was for a cornmeal cookie that was quite commonly eaten around the turn of the 20th century. And they're yummy. They're lemon-flavored, and they're full of cornmeal, so they're crunchy. Since I couldn't find my copy of that before I came to record this, I thought, you know, the next best thing would be a snickerdoodle. Everyone loves those. Some people adore them. And this is actually, I'm going to give you my very first recipe for snickerdoodles, which is ancient and battered. It's not quite in my grandmother's hand, but almost. It's a clipping from a 1950s magazine, so that's nearly as good. So the first snickerdoodles, unmodified from when they were invented, I'm sure. You preheat your oven to 400 degrees, moderately hot. And by the way, you can find this recipe, I neglected to say, at our site, the Zesty Gardens program site on upr.org. So turn that oven on to 400. Then you mix together thoroughly a cup of soft shortening, a cup and a half of sugar, and two eggs. Then you sift these things together and stir in 2 3/4 cups of sifted flour, 2 teaspoons cream of tartar, 1 teaspoon soda, and 1/2 teaspoon of salt. I mean, it doesn't get easier than that. You mix that all together until it sticks together nicely. You can chill it if you want to, but I never do. Roll this dough into balls the size of small walnuts, and then roll the walnuts in cinnamon sugar. I usually make my cinnamon sugar with 2 tablespoons of sugar and 2 teaspoons of cinnamon. You can make that more or less cinnamon as your heart wishes. You put those cookies about 2 inches apart on an uncreased cookie sheet or on a silpat on a cookie sheet, and you bake them at 400 for 8 to 10 minutes until they are just lightly browned. They will puff up slightly at first, and they'll kind of sink in the middle. Take them out of the oven, put them on the cooling racks, and try not to eat them all before they're cold. Have fun. This has been Nancy Williams for Petals and Prose.